2017, the year of Batterygate, when tech company titan Apple confesses to intentionally slowing down older iPhones through software updates, igniting public uproar and legal scrutiny. Is this a mere misstep or a calculated element of a deeper strategy? Each iOS update, each annual product release, seems woven into a grander design to keep consumers ensnared in a never-ending loop of need and waste. As we navigate this engineered maze of fading batteries and obsolete devices, questions loom large. Could this pattern be more than just a drive for profit? What other forces lie behind this cycle, encouraging a culture of endless consumption and environmental toll? This case file, join the theorists as they dissect the apple orchard to reveal the rot at the heart of the eye conspiracy, unplugging the secrets of planned obsolescence.
Welcome to Alien Theorist Theorizing Case File 290, the light bulb conspiracy or planned obsolescence. I'm Braden.
I'm Zell.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Andrew.
It's all a fucking scam, baby. All of it.
We knew it all along, too.
Everyone knows it.
We knew it.
All the fucking scam.
Just before we get going on what a scam everything is in today's society, we should have called it trash society. Quick shout out to a fan that's battling cancer right now, Brody. I'm not going to say his last name. I don't know if I should say his last name.
No.
He didn't. I'll just say Brody. He's been a theorite for quite a few years.
OG prolapser.
Just messaged us and, he was hit with some crazy news. He was transitioning for a job, went to get a medical to get cleared to work. They found a mass in his chest and he's now battling cancer. So if you want to help Brody, you can hit up his GoFundMe. You can find that on our Facebook group, Alien Theorists, and then the Theorite group. And I'll have it pinned to that page as well as our main Facebook page if you feel so inclined to donate. So in lieu of that, this episode of AATT is dedicated to Brody and his battle with cancer.
Cheers, brother.
So cheers.
Pulling for you, brother.
All right. Plan light bulb conspiracy. This one was, this is coming off the heels. If you're not already on our Patreon, we had a co-conspirators with Dan Zell and I, where we really started going in on what bullshit recycling is. and that kind of inspired us to do this episode on what an absolute goddamn scam everything is. And that's, and one of the things is like, first and foremost is it starts off with like, can we just agree now? There's got to be a cartel in everything. Like you may not know about it, but there's a cartel for everything.
There's a coordinated 100%. Group in every industry that you could say sets the price in some fashion.
And we might even be talking about the
even
first
if it's not price fixing. They get together behind closed doors and they talk a little bit. They have to. It seems all a little too suspicious sometimes, especially when you get to corp. To some industries which have five major players and they all sit on each other's boards of directors and they're all kind of have shares in each other. Like,
yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, without a doubt. Now, this, what we're talking about today, the light bulb conspiracy, obviously starts, with a light bulb. Where are we starting this one off, Dan?
If you want to talk about the concept of planned obsolescence, like the actual concept doesn't really come into play until the 1930s, but kind of the earliest expression of this kind of idea of producing a product to
producing
last
shit.
A certain amount of, well, to last a certain amount of time, less than what could is like the maximum possible that you could get out of a product. So there was, this starts with an actual kind of conspiracy, and you're talking about cartels. So we're kind of mentioning the Phoebus cartel. Some people might have heard about this, but the Phoebus cartel is cited as one of the earliest and pretty much like most obvious examples of planned obsolescence, even though the term hadn't really been coined yet. So in 1924, this cartel was formed by the major light bulb manufacturers, which were at the time you had like General Electric, you had Osram, which I believe was a German, German light bulb manufacturer, and then Philips. This was the time that, you know, electrification of the world was beginning to kind of take over.
Rolling so power lines out everywhere at this time.
So light bulbs had to be produced at an extreme rate. The demand was extremely high because you're putting light bulbs everywhere. Everybody wants one. And
every street lamp, every house, every entryway, light bulbs.
So the aim of the cartel was basically these companies would get together and they would, they wanted to go ahead and standardize the light bulb life expectancy.
So is this before or after they wore cloaks and sacrificed virgins and did a bunch of other diabolical
both the same
evil
time,
shit?
I think.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. While they were doing this.
Okay.
Yeah. That's like where they led up to that. Okay.
That's how they opened the ceremonies.
I think the maximum lifespan of some of the the outliers, like the maximum light bulb life expectancies. You had light bulbs that were going up to like 2,000 or rated at like 2,000 to 2,500 hours, I believe, of like operation expectancy is like how long you would have them to expect them to last. And what the cartel wanted to do is they wanted to.
They're
the
like,
cartel
we can get
wanted
that,
to curtail.
Yeah, we can get that closer to zero, boys.
Right.
how close can we push it?
You know, this was business to them because this was expected to be like, okay, if you have, you know, this is a capitalist society. So they're like, you know, if the demand goes down, because once we give them light bulbs and these light bulbs are lasting forever, they won't want to replace these light bulbs fast enough and we won't make enough
money.
Once
everyone has light bulbs, no one needs light bulbs. And then we're in a pickle.
So this cartel got together, they got everyone together and they basically said, hey, like we're going to make all of the light bulbs last the pretty much the same thing. If your light bulb doesn't last this, I mean, they formed a pretty serious operation going. Like they had a laboratory in Switzerland where they all got together and they basically would, everybody who wanted to join the cartel and everybody who was in the cartel would like, they would regularly test their light bulbs.
It was like the Boho Grove of light bulbs.
Right. They having gin fizzies?
Popping gin fizzies.
Gin fizzes and swinging.
Actually, they're...
What is it? What is it? Spinning gin, and sinning?
Gin filamentes.
Womp, womp.
A light bulb joke for you. Hold on.
Womp, womp. Womp. Swinging and miss. That's going to get old.
So they would all ship in their light bulbs and then they would go ahead and all test them out together. And if your light bulb didn't meet the requirements of being like between, I think, 1,000 and 1,200 hours, like your company would be fined.
Your bulb was too good.
Yeah.
The next meeting, they'd just fucking spank you in front of everybody. Let's make an example.
So
what I want to know is like they fucking cut it in less than half.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
More
like,
than
that's
half.
Like,
yeah.
Fucking.
One of the best things they did is they were like, they were also like, hey, these are safer. We've got together and this filament is the safest filament out there.
What were they, like, they were using like, a, they like, converted from something to tungsten, right? What were they using before that was...
Edison's bulbs originally were using carbonized bamboo what they were using for their filament. And then that one caused a film to form on the inside of the bulb, the whole burning of it. So then eventually I think one of them, I'm not sure about the cartels, but I know like I think it was either Philips or GE switched to a tungsten filament filled with argon gas, I believe. And then, that one lasted longer.
And then they made them thinner too, just to, you know, well,
they break out faster.
Perfect.
Yeah. And it was also the different designs of the light bulbs and like how they formed them and stuff like that. And
now, I remember watching in the documentary, The Light Bulb Conspiracy, but how it was like a slow incremental decrease too. It wasn't like they went overnight. They didn't go from like 25 to 1,000. They went like 25, they dropped it down to 2,000, then it was 1,500, then it was 1,000.
That's
I think 2,500 was the extreme though. That was like, there were bulbs that could go up to 2,500, but the average, I think at the time was 1,800.
So they were paying kids to go around, bust them. Like it was crazy.
Well, it's disappointing because like, I don't like the idea of it being slow and incremental because the way I picture it is like a mad scientist working on a fucking light bulb and running it up to one of those rich guys in a cloak. And then you'll look at it, turn it on, be like, no, shittier. Guy's got to run back, make a new one. No, shittier. I want this thing as shitty as humanly possible.
Just it still works, but it's not for very long.
But shittier. Yeah. Just works, but just can less
we,
good.
Can we boost the price also at the same time?
Absolutely.
Probably.
And like, and you got to think like the underlying reason for this, like, because this is before the Great Depression, and we'll talk about in a little bit of how this was utilized to, you know, to combat the Great Depression. But like, this was strictly a like, we can sell more light bulbs. Many more light bulbs. And then like the gum cartel was like, God damn, we can do the same thing with flavor.
Well, I mean, yeah, before we're going to talk about it, but before the Depression, there was like more of like people who would take pride in a product that would be that would last longer. Last longer, that you could use for longer, that you could like they could resell at good value. It was like especially in America, like a pride thing. And in Europe at the time.
Well, instead of replacing, you would take it and repair it. Right? What it was.
There was like, a repair culture, like,
Yeah, like you'd want to fix it as opposed to trading it in for the newer, better, flashier thing, right?
Yeah, and the cartel eventually did break up. Like it did, you know, I think even prior to the Great Depression, like within, it only lasted like for maybe like 8-10 years, I think.
So you're saying a group of fucking sneaky, greedy assholes couldn't get along with each other for that long?
Well, yeah, and then also they became the target of like antitrust lawsuits and during in the U.S. at least, like they had a number of lawsuits leveled against them for doing this kind of stuff. Like it is...
As it would be, you would think.
Like once you would think. That was back when antitrust laws were still pretty, you know, had teeth. Anyways, so that's what a lot of people agree is kind of the beginning of planned obsolescence, or the first kind of example of like a targeted formation or effort by companies to kind of do something like that. So planned obsolescence still after that, it hadn't become like an integral part of the like consumer culture of what the US is now. There was still some time ramping up into that. And so like Braden mentioned, during the Great Depression, that's when the idea started to kind of take on, started to kind of take shape, because you specifically had like a kind of a personality behind it to kind of push the actual idea. This person being one Bernard London, who was an American real estate broker. So in 1932, he distributed a number of pamphlets titled "Ending the Depression Through Planned Obsolescence." And
it's a good idea. Like it's a good idea when you look at it through that way. It's like they're in a fucking rut. And so they're like, well, hey, one way we could possibly do this is if we start making things not as good, or we limit these things to the certain lifespan so that we can start encouraging people, consumers to buy and start growing and start like kickstarting the economy, right? Because this will produce jobs. Like in that theory, in that context, in that time, good idea.
Makes sense. But then if you go back just a little bit, like, we talked about, I think on the pre-hours here, like Henry Ford and his Model T. So Ford was the biggest automobile sales in the nation, in America. And they were building this Model T for years and years and years. And then General Motors comes along with a slightly stripped down Model T with a different paint job and looks a little different. And then they started introducing year after year models. And that was like just before the Great Depression. So that was like the initial Kickstarter of this. Like, hey, in 3 years, you're going to want a new car because... You know, it's got this new, it's got a new color. You can get it in green now, or red, or whatever the colors were. You can get it with a windshield, slight 2 inches taller. Like these small incremental increases in the exact same car every 3 or 4 years. People are like, oh yeah. And then they'd sell it on secondhand, buy another one. And that ended up, it led to this Ford having to take part in that. They're like, okay, we don't make the Model T anymore. We're going to have to compete. We got to make new cars every year.
And they went with the fucking Ford Ranger. God damn.
So yeah, the idea or the concept of planned obsolescence hadn't taken, it wasn't brand fully new. Formed yet, but you had the cultural shift beginning, at least in, you know, in the United States and in other places, where it was now becoming the fact that things weren't tied to quality anymore. It's like, it wasn't like a mark of pride to own a certain, you know, an item for a long time, being able to repair it and it lasting for a very long time. You wanted the newest and the best thing. Items and products started tying themselves to things like fashion, and you were being like, you know, you want the coolest looking one, best color, new color, you know, this one, whatever, like new type of lettering on the side, whatever, like that kind of thing started taking hold. And that, I mean, you had the roaring 20s, like there was this, you know, that whole like little, you know, the decade of like everybody was like in excess, you know, Great Gatsby.
Everyone was buying light bulbs and getting electricity to their homes, and it was a party.
So it's like a consumer based economy, right? Like everybody wants bigger and better. Let's buy, consume.
Goods were relatively cheap compared to the average salary. Like anyone could afford most stuff. Like anyone could buy a car. I was like, back in the Ford days, like Henry Ford was like, I want all my workers to be able to buy this car easily. And that was kind of like all products.
Yeah, and it wasn't like owning things or buying new products wasn't like a necessity. It was more like an expression of your social and economic status is what it became tied to. So people were buying like you own more stuff. I mean, it still is.
Same shit today.
But that's where it started to kind of take that form, and then just kind of grew out from there. So there are plenty of examples of planned obsolescence being put into things, and kind of not necessarily to the extent of the Phoebus cartel, but you have one of the other earlier examples is you have the development of nylon by DuPont. Mm. And everybody knows DuPont and their shady fucks just went, there's probably like 100 things we could talk about.
Guys love wrestling.
Yeah. Is that the same DuPont?
Yeah, it's the fucking Foxcatcher dude. He's a DuPont. Yeah.
So DuPont introduced nylon, which was the world's first synthetic fiber in 1935, and it became pretty much an integral part of a number of different products, from everything from like, you know, toothbrushes to parachutes. But the most, probably the most exciting thing back then was that they were using it to make, you know, women's stockings. That was what they were pushing on it. They were being like, this is the greatest thing ever. And
cover up like, those hairy legs. Tons-
DuPont pantyhose. Yeah. Just throw in a pair of DuPont pantyhose and you're ready for a good night out.
So the designs for nylon stockings were first released in 1939 in the United States, and they were a huge hit, and everybody like, yeah, we got to get behind this, and everybody was buying them. So the ones that DuPont were producing were advertised as offering a combination of both durability, elasticity, and affordability that whereas you couldn't compete with rayon stockings at the time was the other direct competitor, but they weren't even close to as good as the nylon ones were. So, you know, they have plenty of like old advertisements. You can go like, you know, towing your car with the DuPont stockings and stuff like that. They'll never run is what they were.
I love the fact that used to be an ad, because I'd be like, you'd be lucky to fucking drag an egg with one of those things now without a fucking tearing them. I can't even get my leg in one.
Gone up two sizes.
So now the thing is like, okay, so leading up to World War II, you know, nylon became used for things in military purposes pretty much. And it was like kind of pretty much an embargo, but like you couldn't put them out, and they weren't going to be publicly putting that stuff out. All nylon was going to the production of like wartime production, stuff like that. And so, but after post-World War II, DuPont realized that, hey, if we make we've been making these great stockings, but the thing is like, they last too long.
They're too fucking good. Again,
our sales are starting to decline.
Yeah. So we're going to actually go ahead and, you know, this was a conscious decision on their part, according to people like who worked within the company have kind of made comments about them being like, okay, they told their engineers, basically, we want you to make a shittier stocking. We want you to go in, change the chemical composition of what you make, of what you make, and make them shittier. We
so
want
them the same to as be before, but shittier,
not last as long. And it was like, it was noticeable. Cause after, you know, World War II, people were talking about like, oh man, these stockings, like they definitely don't last as long as they used to. They're
nothing
they
lasts as long as they don't build them like they used to.
How do they test pilot that shit? You get like just a bigger lady at the plant. All right, try them on. They run. Yeah, perfect. Yeah. Mass producers
ship,
fucking
ship them out.
Yeah. No, they just had,
there, stamps it.
Yeah. No, it's just like, I mean, women weren't much into the engineerings back then. And it's like, no, you just had a male scientist like trying them on, like putting them on, just walking in there, just say, lift up your pant leg. Show us some leg, Edgar. Show us some leg, Edgar. Do the Charleston. Yeah. Ah, there you go. All right, run. Perfect. I love it. So by making these shittier, you know, and making these shittier stockings out of inferior chemicals and stuff, like in, you know, recipe or whatever, people, ladies would have to buy replacements more frequently, therefore driving, you know, driving profit.
So both those and the dollar signs.
So, yeah, it's, I mean, that's not. It's something to be expected almost.
This concept like, doesn't this translate point, well to the like, podcast world.
Yeah, it does, because we've been planning ours to get shittier and shittier as we go, because we're like, we're too good.
It's not leading to more sales.
That's happened organically, though.
It's not leading to more sales.
Yeah, it's not something... Planned obsolescence is a thing that kind of is... Now, I mean, almost we don't... It's everywhere.
You just like, know it.
Everything you can pretty much expect to not last as long as it does. You know, if people remember, I mean, when we talked about this and we said we were going to do this, I was like, oh yeah, planned obsolescence. That's a thing. I remember, you know, 2017, that was recently. That's when Apple was caught.
Yep.
Like, I mean, tech companies are probably the most,
oh, 100%.
If not the top, if not one of the most like blatant offenders or of the kind of planned obsolescence.
Dude, that Apple like, one, like it's almost more malicious because the hardware worked fine, but as they updated the software, it would make the hardware run slower or not interact with each other. So your battery would die faster. The phone itself probably was fine, but the new update wasn't compatible with the old hardware on purpose. So
I've been ducking an update since 2012. So
every 2 or 3 years, you want a new phone because this thing's just not as fast as it used to. And they're like, it's our bad.
Yeah, yeah. Even before the iPhones, like even their iPods, like when they were like some of the original iPods were only lasting for like 18 months, I think was like the expected battery time on that.
Which is fucking wild. Like,
that's legit. Awful. Because how expensive were they back then?
Dude, really expensive, those fucking big old bricks. And the thing is, like 18 months, I'm like, that's not a lot of time at all. No. And you're like, that's the design. You're like, we designed them to fail at the 18 month mark. Like, it's wild to me.
But yeah,
I still have one that I've refused to get rid of. I have it. It doesn't work. It stopped working.
It's a collector.
I'm like, I can't get rid of it. I spent too much money on it.
It's basically a hard drive in there. You know, get that thing out. But BatteryGate. BatteryGate is what we kind of, what it ended up naming the whole Apple battery scandal. And so in 2017, you know, it was discovered that Apple was releasing the software updates like Zell mentioned, and that we're basically throttling the performance on your iPhones. And I remember following the articles about this and being like, shit, that's fucking crazy. Yeah. But it also makes sense because you're like, you know, you're plugging in your phone and you're like, it doesn't charge, you know, the charge doesn't stay as long as, I mean, it was noticeable and people were kind of just being like, okay, maybe my phone gets old. But this is kind of part of the tech thing where it's like most of these tech companies, the life expectancy for most of these tech things is like 2 years. And they know that. And they're like, okay, these people are going to probably buy a new one in 2 years and be like, okay, yeah, like that was kind of
the idea.
Well, it's
not even probably. We're going to entice these people because instead of planned obsolescence, we're going to put a fancy new fucking term on it. We're going to say upgrade.
Yeah.
Oh, this isn't obsolete. It's time to upgrade because this one's fucking blue and the one you had last year was fucking black. Well, this one takes a slightly better picture. And this this one comes with fucking U2 album on it. Like, sweet.
You're welcome. Even with Apple, with the battery gate, like with them getting sued and shit, it's like, yeah, they were like, whoops, our bad. And they're like, here's a $50 credit to the Apple store.
That's all they got?
Well, they were like enticing sales, right? So like a lot of people say that like the lawsuit may have worked out in their favor, even though they had to pay money.
Yeah, they ended up paying, like, in total, I think Apple ended up paying $500 million, which kind of came to about, like, it came to, like, $25 per person, like, per iPod owner or whatever, like, iPhone
probably
owner.
In the form of coupons,
probably. But it did, I mean, people have said it did make a dent in their, like, their thing, but
short
again,
term, but very short even term.
Not much.
Because the one that I was reading, because I was just like, I was doing on deep dives on kind of like Apple and other products, like two of the ones that I want to talk about. First one is like MacBooks from like 2015 to like 2018. Their hard drives are like not solid state drives, and they're like designed, they're like bad, like not good, like HD drives. They're like the spin up ones. Yeah. They're like, you can just go. And they're hard for you, but like you can go to like a Mac guy or like one of those like computer guys, and he'll just fix it for you. And he's like, I can make it run as good as a new one.
Cool.
Like with just a tweak.
No, because I think mine's like 2016.
Yeah, like that's what, because I was just talking to a guy about, because my laptop is so slow. And he's like, yeah, I can fix it, no problem. Don't get rid of it. He's like, I can make it work just like brand new. I was like, really? He's like, yeah. He's like, they just make them shitty.
Dude. I was like,
damn.
You want a prime example of this? Like one that I'm living right now? So my kid, I went out and dusted off all my old Ninja Turtles for him. He's got them. He loves and plays with them all the time. The new movie came out. Got to get the new toys, obviously right?
Yeah.
Because the old ones are busted. Like the old ones are old. We need the new ones. He's got the new ones. The two of them are already broken. And my fucking turtles from 1988 are still kicking it. Well, but they're genius because now my kid, I got to replace it. My kid's in love with that toy. He needs it again. He's devastated when it breaks. So then you're fucked.
Yeah, like that's cheaper an interesting plastic. One because
yeah, buddy.
Design, like especially with baby stuff, because you'll just go get a new one. There's been tons of stuff that's broke. Like my baby monitor just broke. I literally instantly was like, well, there's another $150. Got to order a new one. Obviously, I'm going to scam them and send back the old one, say it was the new one that didn't work. But, you know, that's neither here nor there.
Right?
The best baby monitor I got was off
Amazon. That's what some low life would do that.
Not me. The other one, people might remember this viral one from years and years ago. And when I read into it, I was like, it sparked a memory. I was like, oh shit, I remember that. And that was phone blocks. If everyone remembers like 2012, 2013, there was a company starting that had a concept idea for phone blocks. And what it was- it was called a modular phone. And how it worked was because at the time, cell phones were like, I think- leading the charge or like quickly outpacing every other electronic for ending up in the like electronic recycling. So the idea was to cut down on that electronic waste. So what they had was they had like everyone, you would have like an iPhone looking like basically it'd be like your computer box. And then you would have plug-in blocks that you can plug in. So everyone can customize your phone any which way. So if you're really like photos, like
getting the fucking thing on your Game Boy. Picture, print out a picture like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you can plug in what blocks you want. So if it's like you like to play games, you could, you know, have the controller adapters and plug in a faster processor or a better video card or a bigger screen. And then like if you like the camera, it was called Phone Blocks.
What year was this though?
2012, 2013.
Yeah, 10 years ago.
Right? So, and you wanted a good camera, you would buy you could buy a base phone for, you know, however much, and then just upgrade pieces to it if you wanted.
It was a PC in your pocket.
Yeah. The idea was that would cut out on just throwing away an entire phone and being like, I need an entire new phone. It was trying to cut down on that waste. Well, Google bought that. And for 2 years, they're like, this is great. We're doing it. We're running it. This is going to be the next big thing. And then they just quietly didn't tell anyone and just fucking terminated that program. Just never ran it anymore. Just buried it. Right. And like even there's a company, what's it called here? I had the name, OneArmy.earth. And they're like, yeah, remember Phone Blocks? And they kind of go through the mission statement of Phone Blocks. It gets acquired by Google and Google does absolutely nothing. Right. And just like killed it. And like the reason they killed it is because like, it's not as profitable, right? You're not selling. You know what I mean? Like, it's not as profitable than to just sell someone an entire new $1,000 phone.
Selling
in 2 years.
New attachments. Be like, well, that attachment's fucking old and shitty. You need the new one.
I wanted one so bad.
Me too.
I remember the concept. It was pretty.
I don't remember that shit.
There's no reason that wouldn't have worked. Maybe back then but now we're 10 years later. If they would have kept with it, it would have been perfect. You could have got an awesome phone, like something that looked just like a Galaxy or an iPhone. Pop off the back, upgrade this every couple of years. It'd have been amazing. But now
everything just sits in your case. Yeah.
But then on that same topic though, how much more would you pay for a phone like that? Baseline. Like, okay, this phone's going to last me for 10, 15 years. I kind of can upgrade it and upgrade it. Would you pay a lot more? Would you pay
the base phone with the back limit was
like $2,000 to start, but that phone's going to save you $10,000 over 10 years. But most people buy their phones through, like, you rent your phone pretty much, right?
Yeah.
You pay $5 or $10 a month and you get a brand new phone every year or two. You toss it back in. Like, what model? That's how much more would you, to make it profitable, how much more would that phone have to be initially?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Sure wasn't
right?
buying that in 2012. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
No, you're renting the phone every month.
Oh yeah.
Right, but it's frustrating when you see these things.
And then
like,
I'm calling fucking Rogers and Telus and lying, telling them I'm canceling my plan so they send me a new phone.
Dude, it just makes you wonder like how many great ideas are out there that no one's heard of yet because people, investors and stuff, look at them, they run the numbers, they're like, it's too good. No, it's not. Like, it's crazy. How much better stuff could be?
Who would have thought that?
Or they get acquired just like that by a big company comes in, right? A big company swoops in and is like, we love this idea. We're going to make your dreams come true, right? Come on with us. And then they just fucking, they buy the rights and then they kill it. And they're just like,
they kill it or they just make it shittier.
Yeah, we're never doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, it happens. We just watched it happen. Like how many of those are just sitting out there? How many battery patents? How many all these other things are like, oh yeah. Hey, electric cars are going to be a great idea. You have a battery that can run for how long? 100,000 hours. Well, can we bring that down to 10,000, 20,000?
Well, you know, and these nothing happens to these motherfuckers until they get caught with their pants down. Because just like the light bulbs, right? Forever we've had these shitty light bulbs until LED technology kicked off. Then it's like, you would have thought that light bulb technology just leaped hundreds of years forward. They're like, well, we got a 19,000 year light bulb you can put in right now. It'll never die.
let alone we've had, 130 year light bulb that's still kicking it?
Yeah.
And LEDs weren't invented until recent
20 years.
Yeah, but then all of a sudden, like you go into Home Depot. What I'm saying is you go into Home Depot right now and you look at light bulbs, like every light bulb's like lifetime light bulb, lifetime light bulb, this light bulb. It's because no one wants light bulbs anymore because a lot of LEDs are more cost effective to run in your home. Everything's getting cheaper. So now they're like, fuck. Right. Yeah. But had you just not got greedy and made long lasting light bulbs, people probably wouldn't have paid to make the switch. Right? They would have been like, I don't need to buy LEDs.
LEDs are more efficient and brighter.
But until it goes out, right?
I wouldn't want that 100 year light bulb in my house. I wouldn't want five of those. I'd rather have five LEDs. So, I don't want that.
That's
tiny
a good point,
light
though,
bulb that lights nothing.
We say LEDs only been out in the public for 20 years. Like how long before that, I wonder, was that technology tied up by people buying the patent, trying to suppress, the value's not
big
there.
Light bulb.
Big light bulbs have got them.
Big fucking
problem.
Light bulbs getting, suppressing right, that getting, shit.
Well, and like we were kind of saying, there's a light bulb that's been, where is it? Irving, California?
Liverworth
Fire California. Department. Yeah, California. It's been burning for 130 years. They actually had a 100th birthday celebration for it.
Wait, they sang happy birthday to it. It's the whole town
comes. There's a 24/7 live stream of it. And the light bulbs lasted, it's outlasted
so
two webcams.
Stupid.
Right. And here's the thing. It's like the funniest thing to me is it's painted like when you watch this and you're like, people are like, ah, happy birthday, light bulb. Wow. 100 years. And it's like, it's painted as if this is some sort of fucking miracle and not that we're being gouged with every other fucking light bulb you've ever seen die. You're like, they just didn't change this one to the shitty bulbs when they've all made their fucking pact with the devil.
Well, and the cool thing was about that one, if you want to know more, it's in the documentaries, The Light Bulb Conspiracy, there was a certain light bulb builder who had a special special blend of his own herbs and spices for his filament that no one else knew. So, and this guy had created,
he died with it.
He didn't pass it on. No one could figure out how this filament was made. And there's, that's the famous one, but I guess if you look around, there is more of those that are out there around, but not very many. And he took it to the grave and no one knows where, like how to make that light bulb anymore. Or if they do, it's
buried
forever.
Well, they probably do, but they're like, no, we never knew.
Well, now I bet you.
Well, it also wouldn't be pointless. Well, for posterity.
No, here it is.
Like, okay.
Here's it. You bring that back. Now you're like, now you say the, now, because it's kind of retro, that type of bulb. Now you bring that back as like a
artisan light bulb,
like old school, unlimited.
Throw it into hipster bars.
Lifetime warranty on the filament.
Your craft brewery is going to light their brushed steel countertops.
Well, I think that's part of the legislation when you open a brewery, microbrewery. I think it's part of every legislation in North America. You have to have old Edison light bulbs for the aesthetic. I think so.
I heard you get a tax credit actually if you do like anything pre 1930, you get a tax credit.
Anything to fuck big LED, eh? Yeah. If big bulb's still got a couple of tricks up their sleeve, we'll give you a subsidy to use our shittier bulbs that are less cost effective or more cost effective.
All right, just before we talk about a few other things about planned obsolescence, we're going to take a break, grab a beer, and we're going to be right back.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
We're back. So everyone watching the live stream, I got a peek behind the break because we can't.
Yeah, you guys didn't actually go anywhere.
I knew it.
You lied. You lied to us.
Bunch of phonies.
Now I bet you. Now you want to go the other breaks. Way. I'm gonna be complaining about that.
No, we did breaks. We got beer. We got beer. We got a break. We did stuff.
Got a bubbly. That's all I had.
My AC.
Better turn that shit off, bitch.
So the thing with planned obsolescence is like, you could say it's conspiracy. You could say, these things happen, but it's kind of
collusion, dude. It's collusion.
Well, it's kind of difficult. It's difficult for people for companies to produce products when the environment punishes you, the market punishes you for making a product that is too good. And so there's like example is like, there's one this year, 2023 in the summer. And I remember seeing this article when it popped up and being that Instant, the maker of the Instant Pot. And I think a lot of people had this and like a lot of it. I have one, which is like, it's like a rice cooker combination, everything cooker, you know, pressure cooker. It's a great little product. It's amazing. And like it came into prominence and then kind of took off like right before the COVID lockdowns. Cause everybody started cooking at home and like all this and everybody pretty much like, it was kind of just slowly ramping up. And then once that happened and everybody started cooking at home, like boom, it like shot up and everybody was getting one and everybody had one. So the Instant Pot is different from a lot of other, you know, products that are out there because they put a lot of like research and they put a lot into the a lot of development R&D into this product.
We're like, we got to pitch this to moms and moms will pitch it to anyone else.
the actual like the product itself is extraordinarily well built. It's built with like, you know, good, superior, materials and things like this. And it lasts it's built to last. It's not, you're not going to replace it, but therein lies the problem because once they got this out and once it pretty much like reached market saturation point, the sales in like 2022 dropped like almost like 25%, like from the year before. Like, is once it hit that point and everybody's got one of these things, nobody wants to buy anymore because you don't need another one. So, you know, why, you know, so then what happens is they ended up, that instant brand ended up filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy earlier this year. And basically they said that it's not necessarily like, hey, we're failing or, you know, nothing like that. They kind of branded it as a restructuring. They also got acquired by another big company. Another like conglomerate.
Exactly. Somebody bought them up and all of a sudden you're going to see fucking a little less Instant Pots.
Well, what they're saying is like when they got bought up, well, when they got bought up with the company, you know, again, these giant conglomerates that buy up this stuff are driven, you know, mostly by profit. So they're pretty much saying that you need to make more money. So therefore we need to make, so not even shittier, but like they got to do things like make different colors of Instant Pots. And you're like, why? You're like, well, I need a red one. You know, I need the pink one. I need the limited edition Hello Kitty version of the Instant Pot. And you're like, what?
That's okay. My aesthetic.
But what I'm saying is like, you know, the market like actually punishes companies for making a good product. A good product, then nobody's going to buy it.
I'm going to counterpoint that for a second because I have an Instant Pot that I've used twice. And I don't like it compared to a traditional
slow cooker.
I thought when it was bought for me, as a gift. I would have never went out and bought one myself because I don't mind putting stuff in the oven. And to be honest, putting that thing and that's pressurized and it has all these warnings scary. There, like I could pop off the other side. I'm like, I'm going to blow this thing fucking the top off my house. And then it's like, I always think that I'm like, you know, like cooking chicken in 15 minutes. Okay.
Mandatory. Well, sure. Yeah.
I'm like, all right. Like I thought it was a fad, to be honest, for myself. I thought it was a fad piece of cooking equipment. And I thought the same thing with the air fryer. And now the air fryer I use all the fucking time.
You could be more wrong.
Yeah, air fryer is in. I'm like, I want an oven size one.
Well, that's the funny thing that you say that is that air fryer is just a mini convection oven. That's it. That's the only there's no difference. If you have a convection oven with an element and a fan that circles, it's just a giant air fryer. And everyone's like, I got an air fryer and also got an oven.
What?
Yeah, dude.
You've been telling me I'm duped? And I could be just doing this stuff air in my fryer big oven?
Air fryer is a fucking genius marketing thing where like, it's an air fryer. It's just an element with a fan and it just cooks your food fast.
And the fan's just on top.
And it just sucks it up.
It's mostly a fan.
And if you have a convection oven, you set the convection bake, you hear the fan spin, it just
you
a
can do
giant
it in a toaster
fucking
oven. Toaster ovens have convection setting too. Like toaster ovens have convection settings. It's the same thing.
Convection oven is not fancy. No, it's just a fan in your oven. It's not.
Yeah.
It might cost,
it just moves the air out.
It might cost,
top,
if like you're going to buy a brand new one, it might cost like a little bit more, but it's not like one of those fancy, like quick boils or like the other
these
fancy stuff you can get.
Dude.
Yeah, dude.
These,
it's just
they got us.
That's
motherfuckers.
It.
They got us.
The
well, it's also probably marketed to people who like don't have one. So it's like people who live in small apartments and things like that. They might not have
95% like of people have a fucking oven. Like, yeah. And a lot of people have convection ovens now. And they're like, I just got a great
95%.
Sure. I'm just saying, like everyone that I know has an oven. Most people probably have convection, even if they don't even know they have convection.
They live in apartment buildings.
People have ovens in apartment buildings. Yeah,
a lot of people don't have an apartment.
Everyone I've ever worked in always has an oven.
Yeah,
every single.
I'm gonna say,
have you worked in one of the United States?
I'm saying I can only go with my local ones. No, okay, I'm sure some of them have just like a cooktop, and they don't know of an oven, but it's very few. Anyways, there you go, giant. Air fryer is a convection oven.
So hold on. Zell's not wrong. 90% of households worldwide have an oven appliance.
But with like a convection thing on the bottom?
No, that probably includes like toaster ovens or like small ones.
Just a regular oven.
Yeah.
Like I got a regular, but I mean, my oven's really old. Mine's got one of those little dragons that live in the bottom, like the Flintstones. It just blows flames on it. So I don't think it's going to air fry nothing.
Anyways, that's it. That was just a little tangent because of people, I thought it was funny when people were like, I got an air fryer.
I get the convenience of an Instant Pot too, but I was in the same boat as Braden.
But
I was like, I was all excited for it, but I'm too scared to use it. Scary. But I saw all the warnings.
I use
mine
for rice all the time.
But I'll be 100%. I have an air fryer that I got for Christmas that I use, and I also have a convection oven, which I also use. I just have two. I use them both. Sometimes at the same time.
Hey, listen, why don't you put your air fryer in your convention oven and then it's
double it up.
Okay, double it. Yeah. Just cut that right time.
Good.
Yeah, like
good thinking, boys.
Buddy, you're about to be
you guys are
up
you
big
scared,
oven.
You guys are scared to use a pressure cooker, but you're like, I'm going to put my air fryer inside my convention oven.
But if you came to my house and saw all the extension cords running around here, you'd be like, what is going on here?
Fire marshal's nightmare.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You're like, you got your fucking air fryer hooked up right beside your hot tub, don't you?
Right above it. So yeah. I can reach in.
It's on a little like styrofoam floating raft in there. Yeah. And
my hot tub has a middle piece you can plop in there. I like to put it right in the middle there. When I'm making my
the Wellesley Arms Hotel.
My chicken strips, my chicken fingers.
Spice slam shakes.
So one thing about we didn't mention about Batterygate. Like Batterygate, the whole Apple scandal is what kind of people say was a catalyst for the like bringing planned obsolescence as the kind of like, you know, that market strategy that companies are using. It brought it to like the attention of like major, you know, pretty much like government out into the public. Like people were actually kind of starting to catch on to like this actually being a thing, you know, probably, you know, also due to the internet and widespread information, all that kinds of other factors. But this event is usually attributed to kind of like popularizing and starting to galvanize the movement for people to rise against,
fight back,
when you start to look into like this style of business practice where you're just like, yeah, we're just going to keep making it so people have to keep consuming. It seems like really counterproductive to like the current like climate initiatives that we have in North America, where you're like, hey, we've got to reduce our impact. And then you're like, another phone, another one. Like you're like,
well, the best part about that, who are the people that are pushing these green initiatives up your fucking ass all the time?
A lot of these companies are supporters of it.
And they're the worst. They're the reasons for these issues.
They're like, you should feel bad.
Yeah, you should feel like shit.
They see the opportunity. Yeah. They're taking it.
Yeah.
So there has been pushback, and there has been, even before, you know, recent times, like there has been, legislation passed, like certain types of, certain laws and stuff enacted, at least in some, I know in the United States, like there have been laws that have basically put, was it the Magnuson something warranty act? I think it was like basically kind of regulating how warranties work and like what is required to be put into a warranty. And then I think they get, you know, you either get subsidied or something because you have a warranty on your product, encouraging companies to provide warranties for their products and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's bullshit too.
More recent stuff, you have like the European Union, which is kind of a big one now. I mean, we've seen with other, you know, certain products, like, you know, the design on the app, on the iPhones, like you got to get USB-C. And it has to be USB-C so everybody can use the same fucking thing. You don't
Thank
have to use
God, like, yeah. For fuck's sakes, man. That's insane.
Yeah, which, but now you need a fucking dongle to listen to fucking music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, get fucked.
And then we all got to change our plugins because they got fucking those stupid bricks. We got new. Oh, they're like, we're going to change both ends of the cord. I'm like, keep the one side USB, you assholes. Like, are you
we're not even
going to
give it to you.
Ends?
We're not even going to give you that
fucking
piece, though.
You're losing it.
But Joby Creed, the first time I got a double-ended USB-C, I was like, are you out of your goddamn minds? Everything is USB plug-in. Are you fucked? The other end, you idiot.
Motherfuckers.
It wasn't a USB to USB. We were just talking about the one end that you all fucking changed. We were all fine with the one end USB. No one was complaining about that. None.
They're the same speed, 3.2 USB-C.
Oh, God damn it. Drive me nuts. Now I got to buy a new fucking brick thing. And you're like, oh, God damn. And you're like, stupid. I'm like, you're not going to send that? You're not going to send that with the product?
They don't give
I'm
it
like,
to you.
Oh, fuck. That's just like, that's cable, just a fuck
cable
you.
Cable not included,
consumer.
Right? Cable not included. That's the best
that's
one.
That's a fuck you for the to the consumer for making them have to make that switch. That's what that is. They're like, you like that?
Yeah,
it's
but
the
reason.
That's the law.
The reason
that's
it has
the law.
Been like,
we
oh,
have to.
It's more ecologically sound.
When you've already fucking lost
you
the cord, you have to buy order another one anyway.
And then you got to throw out all your other shit, all the old shit that you have that doesn't fucking work anymore because it's obsolete.
I've got 45 of those fucking power bricks.
Motherfuckers.
Those USB ones. They're all useless now.
I'd like to fucking
throw them all
power brick on dickhead's fucking desk.
Dude, that was the most maddening thing, honest to God. That when I got that, I was like, I was blown away, like absolutely blown away. Cause then it's like, you go to the dollars. Cause I'm like, well, I'm just going to go get one of the dollars. Or dollars doesn't have one. So I was like, I have to go to an electronics store to get one of these motherfucking things. And then I went and they were like $39.99. I was like, you
40 bucks.
Motherfuckers. So I was like, that's just, that was a fucking
really,
the consumer.
Really struck a chord with them.
Oh yeah.
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 So like the EU has put into initiatives, you have things like the Eco Design Directive, which is pretty much, you know, EU puts down requirements for energy related products, which ensure that they meet specific energy efficiency and environmental criteria. And then this will, you know, indirectly increase a product's lifespan and, you know, hopefully in practice, in theory. And then they have stuff like 2-year guarantees. 2-year guarantees are mandated in the EU, on these, and you know,
and that's and it runs out in, you know, 2 years and 1 month always.
Right. And make it, well, I mean, even here, it's like most of the time, like we get it in my office, like for IT and stuff, like we all of our computers come, it's like a 2-year warranty, and which is usually like the lifespan of like a heavily, you know, any heavily used laptop or something like that. Yeah. Like 2 years, you're going to be like,
and it's honestly, like
pretty good.
And honestly, and to we as a society, we have to stop frowning upon at like, you know, 23 months, just fucking kicking the shit, like ninja kicking your printer off the desk and sending it in for warranty and just getting a new one. Like that shouldn't be frowned upon because of what these guys have been doing to us. Like we should, that should be regular. Like this thing's 23 months. Buddy, and then you just like kapow it off the desk.
It's cheaper to buy a new fucking printer than to replace the ink.
No, yeah. No joke. I just did this.
That's the truth.
So I had a printer. I had a printer for like 2 years. I never used it very often. The ink ran out. And then it was already kind of not working that well, but I probably could have bought ink maybe one or two more times without having to seriously try and fix it. And then I went to go buy ink and I realized for like $5 more, I got a brand new printer with both tubes of ink, regular size, full.
Legit.
And I bought a new printer.
I've done it a few times.
It's crazy. Yeah. That's how cheap they are.
We didn't go into it, but I'm sure people will either remind us, but we could talk about it now. But yeah, like printer technology is one of the biggest
toner. Need your toner
in this whole thing. Yeah, you can get your toner, but you know, apparently there are some things like about some printers. So I guess like the way that the printer work, or a lot of inkjet printer, at least inkjet printers, not laserjet, but like inkjet printers work, is that basically like on the print head, there's like a little cleaning mechanism. And every time that it's supposed to clean, it kind of like empties out into this little trough that where it kind of like, it puts like the excess ink in there and it keeps it from, you know, getting blotchy on the papers and stuff like that. So once that gets full, it can cause problems with the printer, and the printer senses that and usually says like errors, our printer error, blah, blah, blah. I have to do a cleaning, da, 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 da.
Right.
Well, my office just recently kind of had this problem where it's like, yeah, something with the print head assembly.
Where do you work, Dan?
And it's primary. Then I work in a government contractor.
Oh, he didn't give up. He didn't give up the fucking name.
So, in there, they, you know, it's basically, we're trying to like get people to come in to repair. It's like, can you come in and, you know, clean it out, repair it? And they're like, yeah, it's going to cost $350 per printer. Like we paid $400 for these printers. Like, no, like we'll just buy new printers. Like, why? Okay. And
that's what they want you to do.
But fucking there's another thing, apparently, Saber, that some of these printers. Some of these printers, at least one guy went through, I believe, and we watched it in that documentary, where it was like one of the guys went through and it said that apparently there is like some of these printers, it's not necessarily like the print head sensor. There's like another little chip that was basically recording, and it would measure how many printing jobs that you did, and it would limit. No. It would like limit. Like once it hit that number, like the printer's like, going to throw you an error.
It's just going to fucking self destruct.
No,
it throws up some generic error that says like whatever, you know. And it's like you can't.
I think it's even more nefarious. I think there's, like, you know, I think whatever. Those all the printers are all connected to the internet, and then there's someone monitoring your printer, and they monitor your job. They monitor your office space, and they pick a day when everyone's in a really bad mood too, and then they just kill it.
Yeah.
They really need to print off these documents. They're very time sensitive.
Like, yeah, there's a lot of stress. People pulling out their hair, and then you push the big green button.
Nah,
someone's just fucking with you.
It's honestly like,
yeah. How do I get that job?
That'd be a great job, wouldn't it? Be so satisfying
to do that.
Like the fact that there's a chip, they have a basically like a failed chip that's just like it's meant. It's only job is to make the printer fail for no reason other than it just trick the printer. It tricks the printer into thinking it's failed. And it has it. And you just pop out that chip, your printer works fine. It's like that. The fact that that is okay, and you're just like, yeah, it's fine. No big deal. It's business, baby. Got to keep that economy moving.
Yeah, so, I mean, you have other things, like, you have other countries, like, within the EU, like, specifically, you have France, which has, like, they have apparently an anti-obsolescence law, and so France has made this planned obsolescence. They've made it illegal.
That's because the French people would probably kill people at the business if they found they will riot and destroy you.
They don't fuck around.
They don't fuck around. They,
yeah, the for them, like, if they find, I'm sure it's probably kind of difficult to kind of like prove it in court, like for planned obsolescence. Like it is probably a little bit difficult to do that. But, you know, if a company is found to be practicing planned obsolescence, then they are subject to fines and even jail time for executives, like according to the French law. Also, France has a repairability index, which apparently, you know, recent French law requires that electronic devices, which this includes smartphones, this includes laptops, have to come with a repairability score, which encourages manufacturers to create products that are easier to repair. And this kind of goes into the idea of the right to repair laws, which people are fighting for. I think a lot of people probably remember like the John Deere thing where essentially farmers had to fight, at least in the United States, they had to fight for the right to repair their own equipment because John Deere, like the John, apparently like the more recent models of John Deere tractors would come in and it, like if I'm remembering this correctly, it was there's some kind of like software which would kind of like lock up and you had to get regular software patches or whatever
to
make sure you're essentially you had to pay for it. Yeah. And so they would like lock up your thing. And so
that
like,
you I think, fucking paid for.
And like there was a whole thing where they were getting like, I don't know, they were getting like software from like Eastern Europe or something to like get to like basically jailbreak. You had to jailbreak your tractor. You had to jailbreak your fucking combine.
That, like to hearing, get it working. Hearing that kind of shit makes me think that like we're moving dangerously close to a society where it's like you can't buy a John Deere tractor. You can like rent month to month, right? On the subscription service, the John Deere subscription service.
And do you then want to get, well, that's what they were trying to do, but they won that lawsuit. Like the farmers won that lawsuit to fix it. And it's like, yeah, like
they don't make new equipment though.
That is legitimate. Like we're basically transitioning to a fucking usership versus ownership fucking mentality. And we're slowly shifting to a subscription-based economy.
Well, it's crazy.
Like we're looking at stuff like you say that, like the tractors. There's like with Volkswagen right now, you purchase a Volkswagen. Okay, you own it. It's yours. It's brand new. And then they give you an option to subscribe to unlock a higher acceleration for your vehicle that certain you features, own.
Yeah.
You own that. This is your car and they are hindering the performance of it unless you decide to subscribe to their fucking service.
The car has the ability to do these things already. It's not something they have to install.
And I bet it's illegal. I bet that it's illegal.
And probably voids your warranty, it's, like whatever.
That, dude, I'm telling you, like we're going from planned obsolescence to a fucking subscription-based economy.
Well, and it's funny because we're on the way there, I 100% agree, but it's funny to see that flip because all of a sudden these things that don't last will last forever because companies will be like, we can now make it once and replace the income that we're doing from the obsolescence, the planned obsolescence, into just subscription-based. Like there's income rolling in.
Zell was talking about during the break, but they're pushing this big fucking thing now where it's like, own nothing and feel better, be free. Yeah. Why own anything, right? Rent it.
Rent.
Don't be tied down.
Be part of the shared economy.
Well, right? Like it's kind of, I mean, part of that.
Some stuff makes sense though, in my opinion. Some stuff does make sense.
Yeah. One of the proposed solutions to kind of go against this is like for like a market, like in the market would be like products as a service model, where you basically lease a product for its useful life rather than actually purchasing it outright. So this would kind of, in theory, this is supposed to encourage companies to make a more durable product, so they don't have to provide more maintenance. They don't have to do more maintenance. They have to do any of that. How far does it go though?
Because now you're renting your fridge, and well, if you want to keep it cold, you got to pay fucking $5.99 a month.
Well, then
make your payment this month, so now the fucking
fridge. Well, you wouldn't want to buy the fridge if it didn't make anything cold.
But where does it stop?
If the fridge cartel all gets together and like, this is what we're doing.
Yeah, like how? Well, when does it stop?
You're like, hey, just so you know, your freezer, your premium freezer edition payment is up, and your freezer is going to go from minus two to 7 degrees.
Dude, it's 100% because it's eventually going to be where, okay, you could buy this new fridge freezer combo. It's $2,500, let's say, or think about it. You can rent it for a low cost of $19.99, but then they do that to all your appliances. Now you're only paying $200 a month for appliances, but you don't have to fork out that much.
A perfect time, right? You just have this giant runaway inflation that's just going crazy. Everything's just out of reach, and then you make things in reach by doing this to
by
people.
Offering low monthly payments. But the catch is, the contract is 5 or 10. It's a mortgage. rental amortization. So you pay all this money forever, but you never actually get it. You're just like renting your house from the bank forever. So,
and when does it stop? Like, I read this article from this guy, Tian Zhu, a CEO of Zora, and he's a big proponent. This article was on the Stanford Business newsletter, and it says every business will soon be a subscription business. And in this article, like, this is just him bullshitting, but he basically says, like, my colleagues and I often over dinner and wine would challenge each other to come up with businesses that couldn't be turned into subscription model. We tossed out ideas like guitars and cement. We realized it's not about the physical product. It's about what the customer is trying to do. And that inversion of thinking is the root of everything. Using cement as an example, you realize that flooring is the actual need. There's a whole revolution of industrial carpets now. There's a service contract. You simply pay more monthly fee plus coverages, uses, etc., so you can actually subscribe to a floor.
There it is. It's cheaper to get cheaper to subscribe to the floor than actually just purchase the floor.
That one big lump sum one-time payment.
Well, and thinking about that, like, think about how outrageous, especially in Canada right now, how outrageous housing costs are. Like, to build a new house, like, they'd be insane.
Well, yeah.
Right? It's like, dude,
you're going to get a corporation. Scary. You're going to get a corporation. They're going to build 1,000 properties. None of them for sale. None of them for rent. Subscribed.
Subscription.
Subscripted.
Isn't that
just like giant Airbnb?
Yeah, pretty much.
Isn't it pretty much renting?
The wording's going to be changed, and they're going to be able to swindle more money out of you.
Yeah,
by just changing the wording a bit. Subscribe to this house.
Yeah, it'll be painted.
Yeah, you don't want to be tied down month to month.
You don't want to be renting, throwing your money away at rent.
Come on.
You subscribe to the house because, you're renting the house, but everything in the house is under subscription. The paint on the walls, the flooring, the TV on the wall, all the appliances. You might own the physical wood of the house, let's say, or rent the wood. You're renting the shell and you're subscribing to everything inside the house.
Dan, I can't believe that you would be even surprised
that, would be like
that they
internet
would
and stuff.
You would be surprised that someone would market, like, rebrand renting into subscribing. The fact that I just talked about an air fryer and then I found out it's a fucking convention oven and I've just been duped by marketing tactics. Like, it's just a rebrand. Like, I can totally see them doing something like this. And
just rebrand renting to subscribing to make it sound better.
Yeah.
Right.
And people are going to be rental prices aren't bullshit. I'm going to subscribe instead.
I would just like to see like how you have like a subscription agreement worded like for a house, like as opposed to a rental property, like how it'd be like.
Yeah. Well, but it's the furnishings, everything that's inside that you're subscribing.
I mean, you could do that. You can do that. Now you can
exactly.
You can lease.
We're already transitioning.
You can lease furniture.
Transitioning to that now.
I mean, they're
avoid that big lump sum.
That's what stores already do. There's like, was it Big Lots or whatever? Like Big Lots stores.
We had a place called Easy Home.
Yeah. And you just go there and you like rent the furniture, basically. You go there, you pick out the furniture, TV, whatever. You say, I do installments.
You never
do installments.
Do you just do installments?
How long until they do it to the oxygen that we breathe?
Yeah.
Huh?
I mean, if they could find a way to do it, they could. If you lived on Mars, if it's a need, somebody's going to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If you could restrict the flow of oxygen somehow, or the flow was restricted, like on a different planet, yeah, 100%. You work for oxygen. That's the credit. That's money. And that's it.
I mean, that's Total Recall.
You work for, what was the movie with Justin Timberlake? What was the movie with Justin Timberlake where he has to.
Just in time?
Where
you
barter with time, you get paid in time.
Yeah.
Well, I hope it's called Just in Time because Justin Timberlake.
That's just in time. Great if it was.
That's genius.
Was it Just in Time?
Better be.
No.
That might just be called In Time. It's long. It's an old movie. Anyways, just sparked a bell there.
It was called Just in Time. No. It was not called.
Someone
just
probably
in
made that exact joke on Reddit.
The fact that Justin Timberlake doesn't have a movie called Just in Time.
It's just called In Time.
There you go. Yeah.
They
it's
really
a travesty that it's not Justin Time.
Starring Justin Timberlake. It's too bad. They really fucking dropped the ball on that one. But it was very frustrating to me to like watch this documentary, and then we had that talk about recycling. And then you see that, like, you know, there's this, we're throwing this stuff away by design. Like that's how it's designed. And then we talked about, like, you know, you think you're going the electronic recycling, you're dropping it off, you think it's getting good. Well, like a lot of this stuff, like even in the documentary, like it gets labeled as secondhand electronics so that it can skirt any kind of international laws. And they just fucking dump it in rivers in Ghana for these poor people to rifle through and try to melt and find metals. Right. And it's just like,
the stuff that they don't find metal for, you know what they do with it? They burn it.
They fucking burn it. They just have burn piles of plastic going. Burn like, it's just wild to me that, and you know, we have this fucking wool over our eyes here that we're doing anything good by recycling, doing anything. I don't believe
your cardboard is getting shredded.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Yeah, okay. Cardboard, good. Any of my plastics are doing nothing. Any electronic you recycle has ended up in the river in Ghana.
We talked about on Co-Conspirators, it's we pay to ship our recycling overseas. So massive carbon cost to ship that fucking tanker full of our recycling. It gets over there, they dump it in the ocean anyway, and ends up in the garbage patch. And then, because we're such good people, we now take a giant ship over again, burn all that carbon to go collect it out of the ocean, then shred it up, make it into sunglasses or whatever else, which people buy, throw away again, and then they are shipped back across. It's an never-ending cycle of shipping plastic around.
Further, I didn't realize that a lot of these small communities that are in the middle of nowhere, like hard to get to, there's a place in Tassis. It's like a logging road, like hard to get to. Well, these communities that don't have like recycling plants and stuff, like the province subsidizes like recycling trucks to drive there on a weekly basis and pick up their recycling. And the cost to get the truck out there is, you know, $1,500 to $2,000. And sometimes they're only picking up a couple hundred dollars worth of recycling. Mm. Right? Because we got to recycle. We got to do it. Right? And meanwhile, I sat and listened to stories about how like old forestry camps would just fucking bury all the equipment. They just dig a big hole because they didn't want to truck any of it out. And they would just bury the equipment. So you know, somewhere in Vancouver Island, there's just a landfill full of old cat machinery buried. And then the last one, they just fucking put a brick on the gas pedal and drove it into the ocean.
See you later.
Nice.
They wiped their hands. See you later. Yeah, we're done. It's wild.
Throttle got stuck. I don't know what happened.
Yeah. Make sure to return your pop cans.
I mean, pop cans do get recycled. That's like one thing that actually does. But anything plastic is like low percentage of on-continent recycling. Low. Yeah.
I think back to when I lived in Vancouver and I had to organize my recycling in 9 different bags. I was like, now I'm like, how about you just throw it in with the trash? Cause that's what it ends up as. Like, it's unbelievable. It was unbelievable to me. Now thinking back at the ridiculousness.
We can do better. There's technology out there. It's just too costly, too prohibitive cost wise to recycle on.
And our current society in this way we consume and the planned obsolescence, there is nothing we are doing that's offsetting the waste that we create in just consuming in this society. It's not like the only way to get out of that would be have to, you know, to move to some model where there you can either convince companies to make stuff that lasts for a fucking long time.
Subscription.
Good luck with that. Or they make stuff that lasts like, and then they own it. And so you just are paying them, all the time for its use. That's what I can see.
Depressing.
But I could see with cars and stuff, like I could see a model working with cars because I could see a future where no one drives. Like we don't drive. It's just all self-driving. I could see that future where it's all self-driving cars. So no one owns a car. You just Uber on your app or whatever and a car picks you up. And
yeah,
you choose
it was
what
in
kind
Minority
of cars
Report.
Yeah.
I love that. Like, it's just like Minority Report. Well, I can see it with Tom Cruise just getting out the car.
There's some things that make total sense. But that's the thing is, where does that line of like, this makes sense and where it would be exploited by corporations, right? Because we've talked about it before, like corporations, it's, a lot of times these corporations, it's like it's run by a bunch of people who don't think that way. And it's just like, you just got to feed the fucking corporation nonstop.
It has to grow.
Not like, it's not even like the people. It's like the corporation takes on its own thing.
It's its own thing.
Like corporations are technically people.
Entities.
They're entities. So it's like they do what they do. And it's for me almost it's hard to kind of be like, okay, blame the corporation, but I'm like, it's the beast. Like it was created to do what it does. And how can you blame a corporation specifically? How can you blame a dog for doing what a dog does?
Exactly.
It's like,
the law
you
is
can
there
blame the
for
owner.
It.
You can try and blame the owner, but like the dog's going to dog, you know?
Well, when sometimes. They're going to do sneaky fucking cartel deals, you can blame.
Yeah. And
you allow special interests and them to lobby mm-hmm. governments to change policy so they can get away with more.
I mean, there's like 100 things that, you know, people can do, like specifically, like if you want to take part in what you want to, you know, it directly, like for just a single individual person, you know, informed consumption, you know, take a little more effort into what you're doing and be more conscious of the choices of the things that you're buying, stuff like that. And, you know, even find, you know, stupid ways if you want to like, you know, printer stuff, you can find software patches and you want to crack your stuff. You could do that. And, you know, that's something you could do directly. Otherwise, honestly, it's like, it comes down to like legislation. Like this stuff has to like, we have to put people in positions that are going to put teeth on things like planned obsolescence laws and these things and right to repair and going to be like, look, you corporations are fucking us. We're going to fuck you.
Though, like when you were going and buying a new electronic, like I used to think this way and like, you know, you'd hear, like, I remember I was a early adopter of like an LG TV and I loved it. I had that TV. That TV never fucking died. I chose to get rid of it. It never died. And I have an LG in here that's very similar from that same era and it's never died. And I was like, I'll get another LG. And then when I was kind of looking into new TVs, people were like, LGs have gone downhill. They have a lot of issues. They break in a couple of years. And I was like, now that I'm thinking back to that, I'm like, I think if I was to go buy a new TV, before I'd walk into electronics and I'd be like, what the hell is this like Ivatech? I've never heard of this before. I'm not buying that TV. I think I might give that cheap TV that I've never heard of a try because they probably are making a decent product because they want you to go, hey, this product's awesome. And they want you to tell people so that other people buy it. And then they can start fucking making their shit obsolete. Right. But if you buy a new product from like a new tech company and then you're like, it worked for 6 months, it sucks. Like that's going to hurt them. Right. So like, they obviously don't want that to happen. So like, I'm just saying, just buy the fucking no name stuff that you don't know from now on.
Well, it's all going to fucking break down anyway. So save yourself some money.
Yeah.
Save yourself some money. Everything eventually breaks down.
It's bullshit. It's bullshit, man. We should have never had to change a light bulb ever.
Yeah.
It's been crazy.
That's how, because that was really inconvenient. That's how technology works.
Any last comments before we wrap this one up?
No, I mean, I go all day about every product in here that I fucking.
I don't know. Check the news for stuff like this. Like if your state is like supporting planet right to repair laws and things like that, I would say check with that local government. Starts there.
You know what?
And when you're,
you know what doesn't die though? It lasts for a long time. You treat it right.
Mothman.
A nice guitar. I've had my guitar for 20 years now. Fucking thing's still rolling.
Yeah.
Yeah, but guitars are doing subscription services now.
I would subscribe to a Gibson 339 custom shop, 100%.
There you go.
Yeah. So if you, there's way in, you know, if you buy something that breaks right away, there might be, depending what country you're on before you just get rid of it, there may be annoying ways that you can, you know, try to get your money back from these companies. I know in Canada, you can sue. You can sue. We have a law that is, it's basically, I can't remember the name of it, but I've seen it. I've seen it done a couple of times. You can look it up, Canada warranty law or something. But it's like basically when you buy a product, you have a reasonable expectation that this product is going to work. And if you can prove that the reasonable, that your product died in an unreasonable time comparative to the product's lifetime, they will just have to pay you. And a lot of times, if you go through the first initial steps, as long as it takes, I've heard stories of people just getting their money back. No questions asked.
Like most companies like don't even want to bother with it. They're just like, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Fine.
But sometimes you like, if you're calling those lines, you know, you're upping it to the management, they're all told to say no. You know what I mean?
Like I'm going to talk to you. Yeah, got to talk to the manager.
Yeah. So anyways, before we, who is the theorite of the week, Andrew?
Ooh, I'll put it in the group right now so we can share it. It's pretty great. I don't think you're only going to get this reference if you listen to the last D&D.
Oh, yeah.
So if you haven't listened to it, fucking get after it, boys. Because it's good. Where is it? There it is. It's in the group. And it's amazing.
I seen this one, actually.
It's maybe so good. This guy's, he's a repeat offender, by the way. He's won it a couple times. I don't care, but this is hilarious.
Oh, yeah. You're going to make me bleed.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You're going to make me bleed. With a little Riley Reed there. Yeah, so that's a funny picture.
That's funny.
Good. Well done.
It's unreal.
Could have went a little greener on the skin. He should have tinted the skin a little bit, right? Made her a little orcish.
There's always room for improvement.
Hey, there's always room for improvement, but hey, you smashed it this week. Thank you so much. There was a couple good reviews that could have probably made the cut. They were excellent reviews. So well written. I was like, oh my God, this is so nice. And then only a 3-star. I was like,
Must have been a mistake.
Yeah. Must have been a mistake. So anything higher than 1, we always think they're 5. So it doesn't matter anyways. What else? Anything? We got new supporters?
You gotta know by now. If you want to support the show, support your boys, your favorite podcast, early access, ad-free, all the other bonus stuff, you gotta go to alientheorist.com. You gotta hit the support tab, sign up on Patreon or Supercast, get your custom classified feed, and then we butcher your names live. Live on the podcast, this month's new supporters, we have Snatch Crotch Hunter 69. Nice. Jose Galeana, Kashawan. Wait, I gotta preview this one. Cashewin Mouse. Sounds all right. I just thought it was a trick name. Sometimes. Sassy the Squatch. Elliot. Split Hair Chavez. That's it for this week. Thank you very much for supporting the show.
Woo! And as we always say at the end of these things, keep those eyes on the skies.
See you next time.